All right, go right ahead.
Hello, this is Dwayne Kroenke. I live in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, outside the Twin Cities.
Great. So is there a story that you came in wanting to share?
Well, I was a student at Grinnell College 1957 through 1961. I came from the small town of Perry, Iowa, which is northwest of Des Moines. And I was a history major with a lot of political science and economics. The first semester of my junior year, I went on the Washington semester program at American University.
Wow.
And came back and ran for student government president and won.
Oh, wow.
And that was really a turning point for me at the college. I emphasized the need for this community to be involved in national issues.
Mm-hmm.
And the college rejoined the National Student Association. We sponsored students to go on bus rides to the South at the time in the 1960 era. The most memorable academic experience of my time at Grinnell was the political economy seminar my senior year. We had professors Jack Dawson from economics, Joe Wall from history, Harold Fletcher from political science, Philip Thomas from economics. There were probably other professors as well. And we read the original John Maynard Keynes's theory of employment,
mm-hmm.
and commented on that rather than reading of a textbook which summarized the thoughts of Keynes. We also read a book by Mendes France, who had been the premier of France and was here as the Rosenfield lecturer.
Wow.
And we read a book by Oskar Lange, who was a Polish economist who talked about the incorporation of free market principles in a socialist economy. And that was the peak academic experience. I didn't do any independent papers in history, which I regret, but I was doing a lot of other things. I played baseball, lettered in baseball, although I really was not very good. In my sophomore year, I went out for football, and my accomplishment was lasting the season. Because in high school, I played offensive and defensive end, but at Grinnell, I was not tall enough, fast enough, strong enough to do anything. But I enjoyed that. And then my senior year, I won a Rhodes Scholarship and went on to Oxford for 2 years and read philosophy, politics, and economics, which was a very memorable experience. And a different approach to education, and I really thought it was very good approach and very beneficial approach, rewarding one for me. And after Oxford, I went to the University of Chicago Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 more years of education. I finished law school in 1966 and went to a prominent Wall Street law firm for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved to Minneapolis in 1970 and practiced law there until I retired in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And my professional career, if you will, was primarily business litigation, but in 1985, I was asked to provide legal counsel to the law firm's client, the American Lutheran Church,
mm-hmm.
and the problem was, what should the church do in response to the news that the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service had sent undercover agents into worship services and Bible study meetings at Lutheran and Presbyterian churches in Arizona that were involved in the sanctuary movement. The movement was a loose collection of churches that declared themselves safe spaces for Salvadorans and Guatemalans fleeing their civil wars. And so the ALC and my own church, Presbyterian Church USA, joined together and sued the U.S. government and eventually won the case with the federal court in Arizona, saying it was unconstitutional under the First Amendment Free Exercise of Religion Clause for government to have intrusive investigations. I didn't do any of the courtroom work. It was done by lawyers at the private law firm of Lewis and Rocha in Phoenix, primarily Peter Baird and Janet Napolitano.
Wow.
Who is now, of course, the Secretary of Homeland Security after being Arizona's Attorney General and Governor. I didn't know anything about Latin America, really, and I knew nothing about immigration law, which was in the background of this case, although the legal issues technically were constitutional. So I took a training course in asylum law from a Minneapolis NGO and volunteered to do a pro bono asylum case for a Salvadoran. I said it's Central American, but my first client was Salvadoran. So I started to learn about El Salvador in 1987 or so. Mm-hmm. Tried his case before an immigration judge, lost it, which was typical for the time. And then I volunteered in 1988 to do a second case, and now I knew a little bit about El Salvador, so I said I'd like a Salvadoran case. And my second client was a man about my age. He was middle class background from Salvador, had been involved in the government, had objected to the military's corruption, and had been imprisoned and tortured in El Salvador. So that meant I really had to learn a lot more about the country than I knew. So I went on my first trip to El Salvador in April of 1989. Mm-hmm. The Civil War was still going on. The day our delegation arrived, the Attorney General was assassinated with a car bomb. Wow. So the security forces were out in the streets of the Capitol demanding identification from everyone. The people were from the popular organizations, as they called them, trade unions and NGOs, were being arrested. Mm-hmm. We went to the Office of Comadres, the Committee of the Mothers of the Disappeared and the Assassinated, mm-hmm. and heard about their work. And I saw a framed copy of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in Espanol on the wall, which, as a lawyer, I knew nothing about, mm-hmm. never regarded it as important. And so when I got back home, I started to learn about that instrument, and we visited the chapel where Oscar Romero was assassinated, mm-hmm. and so I really started to learn about him. I'd probably read in the newspaper in March of 1980 when he was murdered that some priest in some country in Latin America had been murdered and meant nothing to me, but I learned about him, and so I've been back to Salvador 5 times. Most recently for the 30th anniversary of Romero's assassination, mm-hmm. and it had a transformative impact on me. I did other asylum cases, a young man from Afghanistan who was a student at Grinnell College.
Oh.
And some of my friends here knew that I was doing the work, and he wanted to apply for asylum. And so I met him and started to learn about his country, and he applied for asylum, was granted asylum, is now a U.S. citizen. I went out to San Diego just after I retired to be his lawyer for his U.S. citizenship interview, and hadn't seen him in 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. We walked around the San Diego Zoo as I quizzed him about U.S. history and civics, which is part of the citizenship examination, and the interview was as easy can be. And we celebrated it with a lunch in a restaurant in La Jolla overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And when I left, he was now a practicing dermatologist. Mm-hmm. He gave me these samples of anti-aging cream, which I always tease him about, but I never use them. So I did cases for Somalis, a young man from Burma, and several clients from Colombia. And it became the most important work.
Wow.
I retired in 2001 from my law firm and audited the International Human Rights Law course that fall at the University of Minnesota Law School, taught by a friend of mine, and the world authority, really. And so he asked me, why don't you help me teach this class? I said, David, you don't need any help. You know everything. But I became an adjunct professor at the University of Minnesota Law School in 2002, and through last year I was teaching the refugee and asylum law chapter in the book, as well as litigation in U.S. federal courts over foreign human rights abuses, and really enjoyed that, and have retired from that, and I'm now, I've created a blog.
Wow.
About law, politics, economics, history, and religion.
Great.
So I'm keeping busy.
Great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I was wondering, how do you feel that Grinnell maybe set you up on a trajectory or influenced your career path?
Well, I had the benefit of what was a George F. Baker Jr. scholarship, full tuition scholarship, which otherwise I couldn't have afforded to come here. And there were a number of professors and the emphasis on thinking seriously about serious issues and writing were important, as well as the opportunity to participate in things like baseball and football. A small college, and then really the opportunity to run for and be elected to serve in student government, which my previous time in college had been really not involved in any campus activities like that. So I think it's when I look at the higher educational universe, I think that a small liberal arts colleges, including Grinnell, of course, are very well equipped for the maturation of young people. And when I walk around the University of Minnesota campus, which is immense and it straddles the Mississippi River, the thought of being an undergraduate at an institution like that, where you really don't know your professors or instructors, your teaching assistants, whatever they call them, it's so easy to get lost. No one knows you, and you don't really have the opportunity to do things like I was able to do. And I think that has been an immense advantage.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.